Welcome to another edition of the Silly with the Lugans. This is Mitch. With me is Brad.
Hello.
Bird.
The boys are back and they're looking for trouble.
Brad, we just did a chant practice.
I know we did.
But I was you weren't there. No, but I was just hearing your recordings. It's got me in the mood.
Okay, sure. We got a special guest.
We do have a special guest. The one and only head coach of St. Louis FC, Dale Shilley.
I'm glad to be here.
Welcome, Dale.
He says through gritted teeth. I don't believe him.
He was contractually obligated to be nice to the fans tonight.
Yeah, I think Jeremy pulled out the, okay, you have to go do this clause.
He's waiting outside. He had to drop me off.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably a joke to make about his wife's car, hitting his car, but yeah. I'll let that go.
We are very thankful that, Dale, you've joined us tonight. We do... Just going to kind of, you know, our normal routine is go through some of the news and events going on, and then we'll get to questions that fans have submitted to ask you. So before we start, would you like to, you know, just introduce yourself generally and tell people who don't know what you're bringing to the table here?
Yeah, so, you know, got appointed as the head coach for St. Louis FC back in May, and have been spending the summer and early fall looking at players and looking at the league and trying to figure out how we can bring a winning product to the table this year. So we're excited about the season and everything that goes along with it.
I like that it isn't even just how we can bring a product, that it's winning.
Oh, yeah.
There's no like, oh, we're an expansion, we're going to grow, we're going to come out and win.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, that's why we're here, right, Coach?
That's right. I get reminded of it every day.
I mean, after all, he is a professional coach, and if he doesn't win, as much as we like you, Dale.
I won't be a professional coach for long.
You know how it goes.
Yeah.
And for those of you who were around back in 2010 with AC St. Louis, you'll remember Dale took over for the one and only Claude Anelka.
Be calm,
Claude Anelka. And actually did some good work with AC St. Louis, kind of turned that season around under...
Not really kind of.
Well, no, did under dire circumstances. I mean, I'm sure you didn't have much to work with. The money had all kind of left once you were brought in.
So. Yeah, I was told on day one what we couldn't do in terms of player movement and finding new players. So there wasn't a lot of creative work to be done with changing rosters and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So we knew what we had and, you know, got guys to buy into what we were doing. And to be honest with you, we couldn't have lost because they were excited about the change and really happy to move forward. So it was a no-lose situation for the staff.
Yeah. And you did bring in some loan players through your affiliations and friendships throughout, I mean, the whole United States.
Correct.
And really, I mean, you could tell the players, there was a spark in their eye once you took over. I mean, they bought in and played for you.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of the whole professional soccer thing is getting guys to buy into what you're preaching and you know, managing the personalities and the players and motivation and the guys bought into it and really did a good job. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, we all had a good time. I still talk to some of the guys, you know, whether it's via email or phone calls or what have you. And they still talk about the days at the end of the year and how fun it was to make a playoff run. And some of them are still playing now.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of them have made their way to MLS over the years and,
yeah, I think we had six guys, I think, make it into the MLS.
So that's pretty good.
That is good.
Especially considering the way the leagues were at the time. It wasn't like the growth that you have now. That's a successful right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Schuler and Louie.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, obviously. And Colin Warner and Mark Bloom, who are still playing as well. And then Mike Videra went to Chicago, and Alec Duffy.
Yeah,
had a year or two in Chicago as well. So, good guys. They deserved it. And, still keep in touch with some of them.
And as nice as it would have been for the team to stick around and see where you'd be now, we're going to start over. We're going to do it right this time.
Hit that reset
button. That's right. That's right. It is kind of – it's a whole new dynamic for me. I mean, you know, the year with AC St. Louis, I jumped in late June. The product was there, and you had to get after it that way. And this one is starting from scratch, and it's a clean slate, and you go out and make your own product now. So it's good.
Well, and it's got to be good for you to have a little more say in the pieces you're bringing in, and to be with it all along to, you know, shape it.
Yeah, I mean, the initial part is the assessment of the league and what's the quality like. And I'm telling you, when people come out and see the games, the quality is extremely good. And there's really, really good players in the league, and the teams are very, very organized. And they'll be surprised at the level. It's quite good.
Good. Let's hit a few just news and notes, and then we'll get to the questions with Dale. And as always, Dale, feel free to chime in on these things. Some of them you'll definitely be a part of. I want to say first, thank you to Reckless Challenge, and welcome to new people who are finding out about us through Reckless Challenge. Mitch, you want to say?
Yeah, they reached out to us, 2 weeks ago, I guess?
Yeah.
And asked if we wanted to join forces, be part of their network, or whatever phrasing that you want to use. They keep using the word family, and we prefer that because, you know, at this stage of soccer, it is a family. It's about the people making things work for themselves, and they took note of what we'd been doing, you know, the things that we write, the things that we record here, and said, hey, come join our growing family. And we said, absolutely, because you guys are great.
Yeah, they've built a good network of writers, journalists, bloggers, podcasters, radio personalities who focus their soccer coverage on NASL and USL Pro mostly. So that's how they came to know of us, with St. Louis FC coming into USL Pro. So we think this is a good opportunity for us to reach some more people, and they think it's a good opportunity to have somebody talking about St. Louis FC. So that's where that is. And
when they heard that we were going to have Dale on tonight, they were like, wait, already?
Yeah. You
know, the coach of the team that hasn't played, and you already got him on? We're like, yeah, we go way back with Dale. So they were excited to hear what we had to bring, and it was – you know, the questions that they've been asking of us and hearing our responses, I think they've been impressed by what the club's done. I think that was one of the things that I really took away from the conversations we've had over the past couple of days with them.
I took it as a compliment that they even knew about us and were listening. But also, what appealed to me was the fact that one of the guys works in the front office at Dayton Dutch Lions.
Mm-hmm.
And between our contacts with Jeremy and Dale and the like, and their contacts throughout the league, there'll be a lot more access, I think, to speak to people and get the inside track of what's going on in the league.
And it'll be great whenever, you know, Dale, whenever the team is playing, you know, Cincinnati/Dayton, we mm-hmm. can reach out and get somebody from their organization on the line to pick their brains, and then we'll call Dale and tell them who they're starting. And
watch out for number 7.
Yeah, exactly.
It all helps.
But just this network of resources that we can contact when we're playing, you know, Rochester, or when we're playing Sacramento, it'll be good to touch base with some people. So,
and one of the things too that you'll see from us as a group going forward with this is that you'll probably see a little bit more. I don't want to use the word polished to make it sound like that we're a bunch of hacks, but you know, like we'll have a better intro coming up, and we'll have a bumper for their shows on our show now, and they'll have it on theirs, and you'll hear of their podcasts as well on this that, you know, we're checking out. You know, hear what other people have to say about what's going on too. So that'll help get us up to speed on a league that we're coming in fresh to really be.
And they'll probably have Bird on as a guest, because an English voice always lends popularity and credibility to a podcast. So they'll say, hey, can we borrow your Englishman for a week?
I'm just a mess.
And that's fine. I mean, we'll have to give him the disclaimer that, listen, all he's going to do is relate it back to Manchester United at least 3 times. Maybe 4.
It's an international break week, so I can't talk about them.
I know.
Okay, so again, welcome to people who are finding out about us through Reckless Challenge, and thank you to Reckless Challenge for allowing us to work with you, and I think it's going to be a good relationship.
Absolutely.
Okay, upcoming events. Let's start with next Saturday. I don't know if you'll be out there, Dale, but we've got a kickball tournament next Saturday out at Soccer Park.
Yeah, I won't be out there.
Ah.
No. Maybe I'll be out there. I don't know. Jerry may tell me I'm going out there.
You might want to check the weather first.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's
scouting talent. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, that kid kicked it far.
And he used his toe.
Yeah. So, we are having a kickball tournament. There's going to be other supporter groups out there. We're having a team. American Outlaws is having a team in a first, really. Arsenal supporters and Manchester United supporters getting together and playing on the same team.
Not really.
To be fair, it's not like they're going against Liverpool. That's usually when they unite.
We should have got Liverpool in there, too, because they all got red shirts. But
that would be carnage. I think Greg and the Arsenal group, they've got enough people to field their own team. I think it was basically just me and Hutch. So we said, well, look, if you want us to play on your team, we can do, but I think he's going to play for AO and I'm going to play for the Luligans.
All right.
And also the Arsenal fans, I mean, they were just going for fourth, man, and I want to win. So, I mean.
Wow. Yeah, you'll notice that the Newcastle group didn't even show up.
I can laugh as an Arsenal fan because...
You had some good players, but actually sold them to France.
Hey, once again, this year I thought maybe it's our year. Now I'm hoping for fourth. So that's...
As opposed to every other year?
Yeah, well, no, every year starts with, we can do it. Let's get in fourth. So anyway, the kickball tournament this weekend, Saturday, November 22nd, out at Soccer Park.
Now, there is something special going along with that tournament now, Brad.
Yes, there is.
Where we're going to be able to finally debut our beer, the Second Shift Brewligans. It's going to be in attendance.
Yep.
We talk about it like it's a person. It'll be in attendance. It'll make an appearance.
The beer will be there. You will be able to drink said beer.
Kyle, corporate personhood.
Yes. Kyle Scarborough, the man who got it all together for us and the label designer for Second Shift. He will have prints of the label as well, which is a Luligan enjoying his beer and yelling as we are wont to do.
Yes. All the food and drink that day, the proceeds will go to charity. Each group that is playing has picked the charity, and the winner of the kickball tournament will get a bigger cut of that total pool to give to their charity.
And that's a decent list of charities.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and run it down.
We've got St. Vincent Home for Children. We've got St. Jude's. We've got the Women's Safe House, the USO, the Ronald McDonald House, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And we will be playing for the Colon Cancer Alliance.
Cool. So a good way for the club to get involved with the fans and to make a charitable donation and just, you know, another in a string of things that the team's doing right, getting out in the community, making friends, making fans. And, you know, this is, you know, again, not the only thing they've done. It's another great thing they've done.
That's nice. I mean, and that was one of the things that the Reckless guys were impressed by is that the outreach is already it's more than a partnership. It's well, family again. I keep using that word, but you know, we hear about other teams in the league where, you know, the front office is a mess and they're asking the supporters group to organize things for them, and you know, to have this kind of cooperation, you can't buy it.
Yeah. Speaking of events with the club, December 7th, there's going to be a Meet My Seat Day for all season ticket holders. If you bought in the reserved section, you'll be able to come out, pick your actual seat. The MLS Cup's going on that day, so there's going to be a watch party. It's going to be a good time. So if you haven't already done so, if you want to go to this party, you need to buy season tickets. A familiar refrain to those of you who listen to the podcast, we need those numbers, and we need you to buy season tickets.
I just wonder if Jeremy's going to make me pick my seat.
You know, I think yours is reserved, but I don't know, you know. Maybe if somebody's willing to pay enough, they can sit in your spot on the bench.
You might be raffling it.
It depends. If he gets pissed off enough, it'll be open. If he gets red carded.
Maybe we'll save one in the stands for you in case you get a red card.
Pick my technical area.
I think we'll get a disguise for him, like, what was it, Bobby Valentine?
Yeah.
When he got ejected from a game, came back with a funny nose and glasses. We'll have Dale come sit with us if that happens. And I did notice, too, Pat Kelly posted today that the VIP and Soccer Park Club are almost sold out.
Which is great.
And, yeah, that means ticket sales are going well. So if you really want to be there, you need to get in sooner than later. You know, this is a great Christmas present to yourself, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or Festivus, or...
Whatever you celebrate, buy tickets.
Any holidays?
All of them. Saturnalia?
I think you could get one for each of the holidays.
I think.
Could buy four tickets and then bring friends.
And a hoodie. and if you do want to sit with the St. Luligans, just buy your season ticket in general admission.
$150. I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
No,
you really can't.
It's a bargain. It really
it's a
is.
Bargain. And the other event that I wanted to mention
Brad's
is
all business. Did you notice that he's just like, yeah, it's a bargain.
We have an important guest. I don't want to waste his valuable time. We do have a Luligan / American Outlaw holiday party coming up. Andy's working on organizing that. That will also be a charity event. It will be a toy drive, you know, like Toys for Tots or whatever, where come out, have some fun, you know, just hang out with the Luligans and the American Outlaws and bring a toy and for a good cause. So.
And I talked to ITAP this morning, and they will have Bruligans there on tap for that as well.
Okay. So,
if you can't make Saturday, that will be your opportunity to come out and have a pint or 12.
Yes. Christmas cheer. and the final event I want to talk about, this one's right up Dale's alley. The next set of tryouts, the open tryouts, those are coming up end of November, right, Dale?
Yeah, November 30th we have an open trial, and then we have a couple in January.
Do you know how many guys are signed up for November?
I don't know the exact number signed up to date, but we're expecting about 80 to 90.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Holy cow.
Yeah.
So you did the invitational tryouts a little earlier. I imagine you're looking at some of those guys still, trying to put the final pieces together.
Yeah. Have had the invite trials in October. Have some of those guys coming back for different events, whether it's preseason or another invite trial in January. I'm out watching them. I saw a couple of them play with the Ambush the other night, and you know, just trying to look at the guys as often as I can.
80 or 90 people.
I know. I'm just, the mental imagery is just.
Well, and we'll get to this a little later when we're talking to Dale with some of the questions, but I mean, it's a challenge putting that roster together because you can't just fill it all up now. You've got to hold spots open for people that become available later. And
yeah, that's a trick.
I imagine you got quite a few whiteboards up in the office right. with, you know, names and numbers and
whiteboards and Google Docs.
Oh, this is the modern age.
That's right.
He's got it on the cloud, man.
Hopefully it doesn't get all Jennifer Lawrence nudie pictures and get leaked out there.
And don't let anybody have your password, Dale.
It'll be on Bird's phone just like those pictures were.
I'm not even denying it.
I know you're not. I'm proud of you, son.
A couple things that we've got going on. USA game last week against Colombia. I didn't watch the game. It's the middle of the work day. Bird, did you watch it?
I certainly did. I was down there at the Amsterdam Tavern. It was a good showing. I mean, Colombia, they're no mugs.
No, they're
ranked third. Yeah. I hope not.
You know, I know it didn't go our way, but I don't think England would have beat them, for example. I don't think England would have beat Colombia.
England wouldn't beat the United States, Matt.
No, because and this is where I'm going. The United States, they're a very difficult team to beat.
Right.
I mean, I think they are a great sum of their parts, but they are a very hard team to break down.
And again, it's hard to put too much into these games because Jurgen's bringing in players that he wants to see, playing them in different positions. I mean, I never know how seriously to take these friendlies. I mean, Coach, you know, when you're preseason working out things, sometimes you're just throwing combinations together. You're not necessarily, I mean, you're not trying to lose, but
there's a lot of experimenting going on.
It's more important to see players in different scenarios than the final score, right?
Yeah, so you have Jermaine Johnson playing center of the back, I
believe. Right, yeah.
You know, so he didn't play there in the World Cup. There's a hunch that maybe he can extend his career by playing in a different position. And so Jurgen's checking it out. Now's the time to do it.
And if he's going to make mistakes, this is
the
work
time.
Through him, right?
Yeah.
And we all know Jones is, you know, one of Jurgen's guys. He wants to keep him there as long as he can. So it might be a way to extend that career.
But on the flip side of the coin, half the team had their minds on the playoffs coming up. You know, they've got other things to really concentrate on.
Yeah, but I mean, from what I hear, Lee Wynn showed well.
He did all right.
You know, and he's
but
he only got
like 15 minutes. I mean,
yeah.
But it's still, I mean, I think they did all right against a good quality team.
Yeah.
You know, I was surprised. The biggest surprise for me was how many Colombians live in London. Oh my God, it's like little Bogota.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, wow.
They were at Craven Cottage, right?
They were the biggest crowd.
Well, hey,
ever
you know,
we
had some big attendances at the World Cup watch parties at Amsterdam. Lots of Colombians were here in St. Louis came out for those games. So,
but the way they were playing, I'm not surprised they came out for it.
Oh yeah, no, they were one of the best teams to watch in the tournament, I thought.
But we play Ireland. I presume it's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. Ryan wanted me to mention him and Kavita will be there at least.
May just be them.
So, yeah, I mean, again, middle of the day, hard for us to get off work. But if you are off work or don't have classes, run by Amsterdam tomorrow and watch with American Outlaws.
It's one of those games you really wish you had like $5,000 in your pocket and could have bought a flight to. I mean, go to Dublin for a couple of days, catch the game. Would be fantastic.
Yes, because, you know, that's just something you do as you will.
So, or, I'm just saying.
I'd pay a credit card bill.
I'm gonna. You know what? I'm going to declare bankruptcy anyway. I'll just go ahead and run up that trip bill.
MLS playoffs, we're in the middle of it. Final Four. New England, New York, and then Seattle and LA on the other side.
It's funny how that happened, that the four biggest teams MLS wanted to get to the semifinals, made the semifinals.
Yeah, I think, you know, New England maybe not, but the other three, the league is thrilled.
Oh, I bet MLS wanted the New York Boston dynamic though.
Yeah, and they probably want that New York LA final. But we'll see what goes on. My question is, the only real controversy going into this is, Will Henry play on the turf at Gillette?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
And if New York makes it, will Henry play on the turf at Seattle? He's got to play in the final.
He's got to play, but he'll be miserable. And man, that's a good question. Well, that's the other thing, though, is that we've seen when he gets pissed off, that's when he either completely shuts down or he has one of those unstoppable days.
My prediction is if New York wins the first leg against New England handily, they won't put him in New England unless they need him.
If it's his last three games coming up, then he'll play. If he's looking to play another couple of years, then he might go, I won't bother. I mean,
the final, he's got to play. If they make it to the final,
he'll play the final. If it is Seattle, there's no way he could beg
out of that. But if they don't need him in for the second leg of the championship, I could see him sitting out. He's only played on turf, I think they said, three times since he's been here.
Jeez.
And those have all been in Portland, and Portland's turf has a, you know, pretty good reputation. So,
and Seattle's turf looked like shit a couple of soccer games.
Well, and Gillette's always messed up from football.
Boy, I don't
know. Seattle's turf's one of the worst.
Yeah, oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
After that last game that was on TV where it looked like
the black rain from those pellets.
It looked like somebody tried to pave the grass.
Other than that, I think we got good games. I don't think there's really any controversy. But
I disagree. I think the West is awful. It's the worst thing I've seen.
I'm sorry. I like RSL too, but LA handed their ass to them.
Shocking, wasn't it? It was
shocking. Believe me, I know.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I don't know what happened. It was ugly.
What happened is LA can turn it on when they need to. That's what happened.
I guess.
It'll be interesting, the Seattle-LA thing.
Hearing rumors of Ronaldinho coming to Galaxy.
Every year there's rumors Ronaldinho's coming somewhere. Well, he might. Are you signing him up, Coach?
Keep him off of the rumor mill here.
you don't want to deal with Ronaldinho's ego.
Need to deal with that.
That's a flat denial, at least. We have that one.
But no. Altidore is definitely not going to LA.
No kidding.
Wow. I mean, it wasn't up very long, but
he's up long enough.
I mean, Coach, this perfect question for you. You didn't have to deal with it last time with AC because this was before Twitter. But now, I don't know if you know the story we're talking about. Altidore tweeted, you know, to LA Galaxy directly to them, when my agent says no, he means no.
Stop blowing his phone up.
Yeah, stop blowing his phone up. I mean, will you have some sort of Twitter policy for your players?
We'll have to have something. We'll have to have some sort of...
I mean, you want them to interact with the fans, and you want them to have fun, but there are certain things that we don't discuss on Twitter, boys.
Yeah, there's gonna be some locker room agreement as to what's acceptable and what's not, that's for sure.
And even though Jose deleted the tweet, it's out there. You know.
It's out there, but I mean, LA look bad because they're basically tapping up a player that's under contract.
Well, and they look bad just because... You know, quit begging. I mean, you know, it's like the girl that won't go out with you. You know, you can keep asking and looking stupid or just move on. And there's plenty of people that would want to go to LA Galaxy.
You'd think. But. I mean, no, you'd think. But, yeah. I mean, but, you know, New York City is this bright new thing, and Orlando splashing the cash. I mean, you know, you'd think, but LA seemed to be scrambling around, so who knows?
Yeah. Well, and they got to get it in, too, before LA 2 comes around.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you got to get your guy now and locked down.
Oh, Los Angeles FC?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a couple years away.
But you get a guy for 4 years, but you, whatever you can do.
If you have a bad couple of years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
By the time LA 2 come along, they can steal your thunder.
Right. That's true.
But look at the style and the quality that LA Galaxy has. As an attacking player, that would be enticing to go and play there.
Yeah, I think Jose just doesn't want to give up on the European experiment yet. I mean, obviously it's not working out in England. But I mean, he was great in Holland. There may be another option for him out there. And you know, even though Sunil Gulati says everything's fine between Don and Jurgen,
it's not.
There are more things coming out. Jurgen is pushing these kids to play in Europe.
Look at it this way, from my perspective, from a coach's perspective. Look at what Zardes has done in LA and his development from his inception into the league, which was maybe, what, 3 or 4 years ago,
yeah,
maybe
something
five,
like
something like that. And now, you know, I think he started off as a center back, to be honest with you. And now he's a bona fide goal scorer in the league. And
one of the hottest properties. And you know, he should be getting his national team call up soon.
And so if you're Josie, not saying that he's not a really good player and whatnot, but what a good environment to be in to develop some of the characteristics that he doesn't have right now, which is playing in tight spaces and being able to score goals and create goals in when you're playing in the front half of the field.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you touched on it, you know, being in that environment, that's, you know, almost more important than what league you're playing in. It's what team you're going to and how you fit into that team structure. I mean, we always talk about, you know, go to England. Only go if it's the right fit for you. I mean, we saw Dempsey was a perfect fit at Fulham, not so much at Tottenham. So there's a case where he could have stayed at Fulham forever. He could have been a hero, you know, like McBride was. But he had that urge to go forward, go farther, and maybe he went a step too far when he went to Tottenham. Not that he couldn't have eventually worked his way into the team there or whatever, but I don't know.
I think Tottenham's a hyperbole of a club anyway, because every 2 years they get a new coach. And
yeah, they do, you know, reshuffle the deck.
Half the players there are from a coach bought them 3 coaches ago. You know, I mean.
But I think finding, you know, my original point and what Coach was saying is, you know, find a place where you fit into the system, and, you know, that's the most important thing. So Josie's not playing now, so it's not doing him any good to sit the bench, you know. Maybe coming back to MLS would be good.
Do you remember how long ago was he in Holland?
2 years ago, was it?
I think so, yeah.
I remember seeing him play for the national team when he was in Holland, and I thought he was really sharp. Mm. And if we look back, I'll bet you we would see a game or two where he scored a couple goals and was really influential. And, I mean, I think finding the appropriate level, to your point, so that you can be successful there and grow in your confidence and whatnot is
confidence is
huge.
A lot of it when you're a striker, especially.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure you've had guys who maybe were punching above their weight, but they were feeling it, and you just knew that was a guy to put in the game.
Absolutely, yeah, and just is so much of it is a rhythm and a confidence and a feeling when you're playing up front, timing, you know, all that kind of stuff, and you only get it through playing and feeling good about your performance. So.
And it goes the other way. If you haven't been scoring for a year now, I mean, it's been a long time since Josie scored a club goal, league-wise. Mm-hmm. He scored one in the FA Cup or the Champions Cup. Whatever.
There's nothing to stop him from going on loan. Just, you know, go to Poyet and say, you know, coach, I need to go on loan for 6 months just to...
They need to get rid of him as bad as he needs to move, because he's tying up a big salary.
I don't think anyone's going to pay money for him.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to find a deal that works for everybody.
You know, so... but. If he said to the coach, look, I think I can still do a job for you. Let me go somewhere else, get some gains under my belt, you know, put some goals away, get my confidence up. I can come back and, you know, give it another go.
The last real rumor I heard was Lille in France. Mm. Maybe France is a good spot for him. I don't know. Coming back home would be good, too, though.
But playing for a team that's third in League One, you're going to get, say, maybe 6 chances a game. you play for Sunderland, you're only going to get one chance a game.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a better fit just for – he's going to get more chances at a club playing in the top half of a table somewhere.
Yeah. So – but he's not going to the Galaxy. Whether he should or not, it's a different question. But
well, what he's getting, though, is £45,000 a week.
Yeah.
You know, that's a nice chunk of change. You know, I wouldn't be going to the Galaxy either if I was getting that.
Yeah. Well, they got some money freed up now that Landon's gone.
$60,000 a week.
let's hit on one more MLS thing. Orlando City released their kit, and, you know, shortly after our last podcast. Hit a home run, and then New York City dropped their kit.
Oh, good Lord.
If it wasn't identical to Manchester City's, I'd actually like it. I mean, it's a sharp-looking kit.
There's nothing wrong with it, no. But the fact that...
It's not bad as a City kit. That's the problem.
For 6 months, they've been saying, we're not Manchester City Junior. Mm-hmm. We're not Manchester City Junior. This is our jersey. Manchester City Junior.
But they also own the Melbourne... team,
yeah,
and that is a carbon copy of an older Manchester City away shirt.
I just wanted a little something, you know. Throw the Yankee pinstripes on there. Throw, you know, a little more navy, a little bit of the orange, something to
just even a vertical stripe.
I expected it to be sky blue. You know, I didn't expect it to be reinventing the wheel, but you know, just a little something to make it your own would have been nice. Mm-hmm.
So Dale, we are actually kit whores.
Yeah,
we really are, and we're dying to see what you guys play in next.
Are you in? Are you in those meetings? Do you know what's going on?
No.
He does.
He's not making eye contact.
Wait, wow. Let me see here.
Oh, he's pulling out of the- I know. I can't wait. That is seriously going to be one of the highlights.
It's something silly, but we do get excited about the kits and
identity.
And Orlando City, like I said, did a lot of things right. I mean, they've got their own color, purple. Nobody else in the league has purple. That's cool. They put a little few touches to...
I like the old badge on the
old badge
side.
On the inside. A few, you know, in the neck tape stuff to represent their supporters groups. You know, little things that go a long way. And then, you know, like I said, NYC just drops the giant Manchester City shirt from the ceiling. And, I mean...
They're paying the bills.
Well, yeah, hey. You know.
But again, it's just lack of creativity.
Yeah,
we've heard it before.
All right, one more thing, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back with some questions from Dale or for Dale. NASL crowned their champion this week. The San Antonio Scorpions won the. They're not calling it the Soccer Bowl anymore. They're calling it the NASL Championship.
The Soccer Bowl. Damn it.
It's the Soccer Bowl. They beat the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, and there were 7,000 or so, 8,000 in attendance. So, a nice championship game for the NASL.
Good league. I enjoyed that time when we went to Indy. Good league.
Yeah, they've got, well, you know, I don't know. Yep. They've got some good things, and they've got some bad things.
Where was the game at?
In San Antonio. So they've got a nice little stadium down there. They're doing it right. Teams like them and Indy, you know, I think are Minnesota United. Yeah, they're doing good things. They still have the Cosmos, who are the loose cannon, signing 80-year-old superstars. But other than that, good game, good time. Everybody that
was, it, I couldn't find a stream of it or on TV or anything. That was
it's on NASL's stream. It was on ESPN 3. That's right.
Was it? Yeah, which is streaming.
Yeah, the place I didn't look.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why would you? I mean, ESPN has not been known to really care about the NASL or anything that wasn't the top level. But, yeah, I mean, supposedly it was a decent stream on there. I didn't catch it. I had other things to do.
Well, I have DirecTV, so I can't watch ESPN 3 because...
Oh, that's right. We couldn't anyway. Yeah. You're right.
That's one thing DirecTV needs to get straightened out. But next year, all our games will be on YouTube for USL Pro, so... Looking forward to that. So, congrats to the San Antonio Scorpions for their championship. Let's take a quick break and get new beers. And
that's really what it came down to.
When we come back, we will have some questions for our fans for Coach Dale Schilly.
Not only do the Luligans support the Lions, the Piasa, and the Fire and Ice, but we also support each other. Turn to Luligan-owned businesses when making your business decisions. Get your custom t-shirts and apparel from Adrenaline Prints. Immortalize loved ones or events with a tattoo from the Washington Tattoo Collective. And use your electric for your home and business electrical services. Luligans working together to help grow soccer in St. Louis. And now, back to the foolishness of This Is Silly with the Luligans. And we're back. Hi.
Hello.
Yep.
Now we got some questions for Dale from Twitter and Facebook and just general fan questions. First question, this question may very well tell us everything we need to know about Dale Shilley.
What's his favorite beer?
Close.
Oh.
Robert Bell on Twitter wants to know, Dale, what kind of coach are you? Are you tracksuit? Are you designer suit? Or do you wear a scarf? What's your game day ensemble look like?
Well, thought about that one. Not sure if it's going to be go to GQ and find the fashion of the month, or if I'll just stick to card hearts.
That'd be something new. You don't see that.
Especially right. In July in St. Louis. That's what I want to see.
Some work boots out there.
Yeah. You know, I've been in Southern Illinois since 1994, so card hearts are preferred to polo.
Wow. I think that's a good answer. I like that.
Again, make sure the medical staff is nearby so when Dale passes out.
Well, we need to get him some, you know, that are in navy and green. Well, but other than that, granted, I think
hello.
We're... Maybe some designer card.
We're not savages here, Brad. Come on.
Next question is Oinkity, our friend Oinkity. Matt always loves it.
Yeah. We're like blood brothers now. I went to Quebec. And
there you go.
That's where he's up.
On Twitter, he asked... Donovan, Cech, Henri, these are some aging superstars. You know, you already said you're not bringing in Altidore or Ronaldinho, but a serious question, you know, obviously we're not going to bring in Landon Donovan.
Thank Christ.
But a serious question is, you know, you're putting this team together, and we know you're bringing in young players. You're looking at young talent. Are you going to bring in any veterans who've been around that, you know, either as a locker room presence or just an on-field sort of, you know, mentor for these guys? Is there room for a veteran player on your team?
Yeah, for sure. We have to have guys that can lead the younger guys. You have to have a level of professionalism, and to have that, you need the 21, 22-year-olds to be led by veterans that have been there and know what it means to be a pro. It's easy for guys to say, yeah, I'm going to be a professional soccer player. But to really be a pro and really get after it the way professionals do and go to work every day on the field, you need somebody to lead them.
So, and I imagine, you know, obviously you've been scouting the whole league. There's some veterans around that have caught your eye that play the Dale Shilley kind of soccer?
There is. And, you know, you guys will might even recognize a player or two that have played against
Alex
us.
Alex Titan.
No, I knew you were going to say that. You're not bringing in Alex Titan.
Alex Titan is going to play left back.
Left back in the locker room.
Left back in the locker room.
Yeah,
that's right.
Nice.
So here, just to expand on that point, explain to those that don't know, what is the Dale Shilley style of soccer?
Well, I think it's about winning. It's about
thank God it's not about losing. I was worried there.
It's about winning.
You don't hear many coaches just step right up. Well, my brand is I like to lose.
It's about winning. It's about competing. It's about hard work and checking in every day to get better and be committed to it. And you know, with that, you know, comes, you know, your style and your style of play, and a lot of that's going to be determined on who we're playing against and what the level of the teams are. But for the most part, we're going to have hardworking guys. They're going to be skillful and technical, and they're going to try to play. But, you know, we're going to try to get after it and win games.
That was Mitch's dog. I'm going to follow that up with he's carrying a 100-pound dog out of the room. This is a professional podcast.
Welcome new Reckless Challenge listeners.
Yeah. We have dogs. I'm going to follow that up with Petrillo. He asked, you know, what are you looking for in a player at these tryouts or when you're scouting? Are you looking for primarily talent, or are you looking to fill specific roles? Or, you know, like if you see a guy that's just, you know, I love that kid, I love how he plays, but he really doesn't fit in with what I'm thinking system-wise, would you take the talent anyway and try to adapt them? Or
yeah, I would say you're certainly looking at a system, but if you find a player that has unique talents and is really gifted, you're gonna bring him on, and you're gonna figure out how to either get him to fit into the system or to adapt the system to fit the player. So if you're gonna find a guy that's really gifted and very talented, you're gonna find a way to make it work for him for sure.
Okay, so you're not married to this is exactly what we're doing, and you stay in that square peg hole thing.
We have an idea of how we want to play in this league based on what we scouted out from the teams over the last year, and what the fields and facilities look like, and what system we think will work best given the environment that the league's in, or that we'll compete in. But we also know that you need good players in order to win games.
Okay. Matt Brown,
not our
Matt Brown, the other Matt Brown, who I still want to meet and put in the same room with the other Matt Brown. He had a question, and you know, this is again something that is changing, has probably changed since you were last with AC St. Louis. Was, you know, the general landscape of soccer in America has changed. It's moving away from the college player and that format to people that are applying their trade in USL Pro or, you know, one of the other leagues first. You know, how do you see that working? Do you look for college players, or are you looking at both? You're just kind of looking at everything, or, you know, does one system make more sense to you than the other?
So we've been looking at both. I mean, we've done our scouting with guys in the league. We've done our scouting in the NASL. Been to combines already, looking at players that are not in college, looking at guys that have been under contract, that have never been under contract, been to a number of college games. You're looking for good players. But I can tell you this, based on the players that I've seen over the last 8 months, it's increasingly difficult for college players to make it because the level of player is good. There's a lot of them out there. A lot of people see the USL Pro as a way to get into the MLS. So there's guys from overseas that are looking to come in. And so it's going to be really tough for good college players to find spots in the USL. They'll be there, but they're going to have to be the top-level college guys.
And has that changed just in the 4 years? I mean, because not too long ago, it was, you know, the super draft was still college players, and now we're seeing the academies build up and the systems build up. And
so with AC St. Louis, I would say we had, I'm guessing, 10 to 12 guys, maybe more, if we went back over the roster, that were 1 year or 2 years removed from college. And that doesn't include Gilbert, Hagup, or Louis, who are all 18 or, you right. know, Louis was what, 16?
He
or
was
17?
16, yeah.
And the other, Hagup and Gilbert, I think were 18, maybe 19. You know, so those guys were all younger than college seniors. And then Dufty and Salvagioni and Stisser and Mark Bloom and Troy Cole, I think Jack... Jack Trainer, Zach Bauer. I think those guys were all 1 year removed. Jeff Cosgrove. Yeah, Jeff was a year out of Cal Berkeley. So I mean, we had a number of guys that were just 1 year out of college.
Okay.
So it's changing for sure.
Jim Bellinger via Facebook wanted to know. Obviously, you're still putting your team together. You're still, you know, building the program. Have you started looking at preseason games, things like that? Do you know how many preseason games we should expect? Or
I think we're looking at four, likely, maybe up to six. Yeah. Preseason games. You know, the preseason itself will last also 4 to 6 weeks. So, you know, looking at a game a week approximately. And but we need those games to filter through what we need to filter through initially, and then prepare for the opening game.
We know there's a lot of big preseason tournaments. In the future, I expect we'll play a part of that. Do you expect to be in any of those tournaments this season? Or
I would say year one, we'll be spending our time at home and making sure that financially we're doing things the right way and not spending money where we shouldn't be spending money yet.
Okay. Alan Braderich. I don't know how to say the guy's name.
Alan. It's pronounced Alan.
Everybody knows Alan. Alan was a player with the Lions. He was a player with Piesaw, Bordeaux. Great guy, Alan. He's obviously, and this will tie into your last question, you know, we see the big teams come over from Europe, maybe even the Division I or the championship level teams come over. Are you looking at anything like that for a preseason to bring them in, kind of be a draw, a moneymaker? You know, you said you don't want to spend money, but I assume you're not opposed to making money.
Not opposed to making money, but it costs money to bring them in.
Yeah, it does.
So I would say that's not likely. Love to do it if the situation was right. You know, right now it's about getting guys prepared, getting them on the same page, finding the games that are appropriate for us. If we can find a team that wants to come over and it works for us, I'm sure Jeremy would be open to it, but it would have to be the right situation.
Okay. Jack Burton wants to know, as far as, you know, you're a guy who's dealing with the players day-to-day basis, you know, Jeremy can talk about whatever he wants, what he wants in players, but you're the guy that has to deal with these guys. What are your pet peeves with players these days? I mean, do anything just drive you nuts when a player does a certain thing? It's like, nope, we're not going to do that on my team.
Yeah, so just guys that aren't prepared to train every day, you know, that don't recognize just how fortunate they are to be doing what they're doing to make their living. And the opportunity that they have. So, you know, I've been asked before, you know, what would you suggest to players that are looking to become pros? And I've always said, just learn how to train properly and learn the importance of hard work at practice and recognizing what it does for you come the weekend. And not just what it does 4 days out, but what does it do 8 months out? The work that you're doing in March, how does it affect you in August and September? Because of a new level that you've been able to attain, you know, through time. So, yeah, I would say my pet peeve is guys that aren't willing to do the work every day. And I'm not talking about physical grunt work of running and sprinting. And I'm just talking about the mental preparedness to play soccer and do the sort of things in training that replicate what happens in a game, the sort of movement, the communication, the passion, the defending, the, you know, the energy, the personality, the excitement of being there. Guys that don't come with that, that drives me up a wall.
I've got a follow-up question to that. You've got two types of coaches also. Let's take Arsene Wenger, for example, who is very, very thorough in everything.
Except for zippers.
But he has the coach that the team goes to the ground on at a certain temperature because scientifically that temperature allows the most oxygen into the lungs. And then you've got a coach like Harry Redknapp who will turn around and say, well, eating a bowl of pasta isn't going to make your passes any more accurate. You know, how thorough away from the training field are you? Are you more like Wenger or are you a little Harry Redknapp?
Well, I don't think we have the opportunity to be more like Wenger.
But are you going to be real strict on like nutrition and things like
curfew,
that?
Curfew, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, nutrition, curfews, all the things that we can control, we have to control to our best ability. You know, there's some things that we're just not going to be able to control and deal with. But for sure, running a tight ship and keeping things steadied and in the right direction is the way that I like to do things.
You know, Alex Ferguson used to have spies all over Manchester, and if he saw any of his players out at bars, he'd get a phone call from someone. So you just give us your number, and if we see it, we'll give you a call, be it 2 a.m.
Honey, I'm working. I have to stay here in case somebody shows up.
You want a number and a stipend?
I have a feeling that the bars that a 39-year-old overweight balding guy and a fit soccer player who's 22.
We're not at the cool clubs.
I don't think we're going to be at the same places.
Well, Jack also wanted to know, as sort of a follow-up to that, we know your pet peeves now. What about pregame rituals and superstitions? You know, every player has them. What are your pregame rituals or your superstitions?
As a player, I used to eat a Whopper every day on my way from...
No, so did I when I was at Vance.
I don't imagine the Whopper's on your list for the guys to do.
Not anymore. I don't really have any superstitions.
Have a lucky tie or a lucky pair of socks or anything like that?
No. No lucky tie. I do change my underwear. no same pair of socks.
What about your players? What are some of the funniest ones you can remember, or things that you're just like, kid, that's not going to do anything?
Well, I'm forced into this one. So, in 1982, we won the national championship as a player, and I was at Florida International University, and we were playing Tampa University in the national quarterfinal. They had won 30 games in a row. They were national champs the year before. And we were at their place. And at their place, when they did the national anthem, they didn't have you line up in a line like they do now. They had you in your starting position. All right, I was a center back. Back in those days, we played stopper sweeper. We had a Liberian guy playing center of the back behind me as a sweeper. His name was Blanca. And Blanca had a real deep voice. And so during the national anthem, I hear Blanca laughing behind me. He's going, and I kept watching the national. I just stood for the national anthem. It was at my attention, and he kept laughing. And I finally turned around and I looked at him, and Blanca was urinating in his uniform. I can say this on a podcast.
Anything.
Oh my God!
So. I said, I was laughing, and he was only 3 or 4 feet behind me and a little bit to the side as well. And I said, Blanca, that's disgusting. And he laughed, and I remember he had big fingers, and he put his fingers over his face, and he came up with a big smile, and he said, wait until I tackle them.
Because that was my first thought, is that I'm not going, and then it's like, oh.
So did that become a routine for Blanca? That'd be good if that just was his new thing. It's like, well, before every game, I have to pee during the national anthem.
I'm just waiting for a corner kick when a guy goes to post up. And
see, I wouldn't fancy tackling a guy called Blanca from Liberia.
Anyway. Let alone if he's covered in urine.
You have me at Blanca.
Yeah.
Anybody that's willing to piss themselves in the middle of, before a game, I'm really not all, I'm not going to get near them. That's just end of story.
Next question is from Pat Mahoney, and this will go back to your, role as you've spent a lot of time coaching youth throughout your career. Pat, I know, is very involved in his kids' soccer. He does some coaching of young kids. He said wants to know, general recommendations, what's important to impart to a young kid, what gets overlooked. Obviously by the time they get to you at this level, the fundamentals are kind of been covered. I mean, but what do you see being missed with a lot of youth coaches?
I just think the importance of a few things, but just the importance of technical and skill development. Just have to keep pounding on making kids technically more sound, because once they get to a certain age, that technical development starts to wane, and there's more emphasis on other parts of the game, and so once they get to a certain age, a lot of that opportunity to acquire a certain level of skill goes away. So I think when they're really young, it's about that skill and technical acquisition. And then I would say just practice and more practice and put in the hours that are necessary to train and get players better. I think a lot of times we think that we can go out and practice for 10 minutes or practice once a week for an hour and the kids are going to get better. But, you know, you really have to put in a lot of hours to become more proficient at what they're doing. And then I think the last thing is coaches, even with youth, is really demand things from them, you know, demand what you want out of them so that they understand the importance of what you're trying to teach. It should be fun and kids should enjoy it, but they can enjoy it while you're demanding a high standard. So keep the standard high and demand that they reach that standard.
I'm going to take the same attitude with you, Brad, in this podcast.
No, I've passed that. You know, he said there's a drop off. I didn't learn good habits as a child, so there's no chance of developing them now.
Then I'm just going to piss myself and okay. cover me.
That'd be a better bet. Dave Corbett's got a good question, and I'm going to ask this in relation to Louisville City FC, your new opponents in USL Pro. They released a video with their head coach talking about the importance of the crowd and a full stand. You know, what's your feeling on that? You know, obviously what's most important to you is what's going on the field, but how does a crowd affect the game, and how does having full stands versus playing, you know, to a half empty place, how does that affect your game?
I think a couple things. First off, having a capacity crowd is huge. Having half a crowd is okay. Capacity crowd is nicer. But I wrote a blog article back in the AC St. Louis days that was addressing our crowds at the AC St. Louis games. So you guys remember that at all?
Yeah.
Actually, I do.
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I was addressing was the crowd in St. Louis and the fan in St. Louis. I think spends too much time analyzing and critiquing a game and almost running through it as a coach. And it would be hugely advantageous to the team and to the atmosphere and to the environment that the fans are watching, is to enjoy the atmosphere more and enjoy participating in the game itself by cheering, singing, chanting, and that sort of thing. But, you know.
So, in a sense, the great St. Louis soccer heritage can actually hurt us if we're analyzing too much and not just having fun.
If you're sitting on your hands and not enjoying the things because you're trying to figure out if the left back would be better off in midfield or, you know, if he should have played defeat instead of space, or this guy's good in combination but he's not good with serve, you know, whatever. I think just a lot of people in St. Louis spend their time at games critiquing. And, you know, wouldn't it be something if they spent more time in the parking lot before the game figuring out what the songs are and then standing up and cheering and having a good time? It would be more fun. It'd be a better environment. You guys certainly help lead the way. But there's a group of people out there that are soccer fanatics. They love the game, and they can enjoy it more if they would stop critiquing and spend more time and more time enjoying the environment.
And the players, they really do feed off of that environment, the singing, the cheering.
I think I alluded in the article, cheering for Jack Traynor when he made or Mark Bloom, when they made a 70-yard run down a flank in the 85th minute of a game, and what that would do for them in terms of their energy level to get forward and get back. So it absolutely affects the players in a big way.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, that we have to be cognizant of. That 85-yard run may not lead to anything, but you got to appreciate it anyway, because the next time it will. But if he doesn't feel anything, if he feels his efforts were wasted, maybe he won't do it the next time. So, yeah, I agree with you on that.
I mean, think about, you know, how many goals we might see in a game. So maybe, you know, maybe we win a game 2-1 or we win 1-0. And how many times does it take a Mark Bloom type to get forward, to get service off for us to score a goal? And if he gets forward 6 or 7 times and we get no chances out of it, but his services are good and his intentions are good and his efforts good, and he doesn't see anything rewarded, then having some sort of reward from the fans for his effort might help him make that next run that helps us win the game.
We got a job to do.
I agree.
I think that's what it comes down to. And I did find that blog post, so I'll link to it.
Awesome.
Well, it's an archive version, but yeah.
The internet's a wonderful thing. last question.
See
from
also those pictures on Bird's phone.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
No, staying with what Dale just said, though, also, and you see this more in European football, is that because the prices are so much more, like $60 to go watch a game, if you're not being entertained, if your team's losing, you sit there and analyze it because, you know, you've spent $60 to go watch it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having a full stadium is one thing, but if the atmosphere is toxic, you know, that may be detrimental to the team. I don't think that'll happen at our level. I don't think it'll happen with St. Louis FC because, as we alluded to, $10 a game is a bargain. But having a capacity crowd also may bring its own problems, you know, and we see that more in Europe. I don't expect it here, but you see some teams. I'll go back to Newcastle at the beginning of the year. They couldn't score a goal or win a game at St. James's Park, but they were getting results at, you know, Hull and places like that, because playing in front of that Sac Pardew crowd was a toxic environment, you know. I don't want people next year to get down or have a toxic environment.
So you're going to take all the Sac Chili signs and burn them yourself.
We see any of those people, we're running them out.
That's what I'm hearing.
Well, off the record.
This is pretty much on the record.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Well, here's my thoughts. St. Louis is a blue-collar town, right? As long as the players play hard, I will support them. As long as they give 100%, no matter what the result is, at the end of the day, I will support them.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, our job, I think, in the corner is to start those songs, to start those chants, and Jack and Liz and some other people are working hard on coming up with new things that are specific to our new team. But if we do our job right, you know, the songs will be easy enough to catch on, the chants will be easy enough to catch on. And, you know, it will spread throughout the whole stadium because that's – I mean, we did see it in AC. You know, we made fun of the one side of the stadium was dead quiet and the other side was going crazy. You know, maybe a mixture of the two, maybe not quite as crazy on our side, but, you know, a little more crazy on the other side would be a good thing.
I agree with Bird, though. I think, you know, having an atmosphere and less people – is better than having no atmosphere and more people. So having people there enthused to be there, and to his point, supporting the team, win or lose, but because they're
and the coach,
yeah, and the coach, because they are their team, and they're the hometown team, and they're going to support them, and that's what you see in the better environments in the MLS right now. The fans are supporting the team through thick and thin. I mean, when you guys went to Indianapolis, I mean, they were struggling.
They hadn't won a home game yet.
But the crowd and the supporters groups, they were
– It was awesome, yeah.
It was apeshit. I mean, they were off the wall. I mean, you would have thought they were in the second place and challenging for first the way the crowd was.
But it's not, that's what you want.
It's not just the players that need to earn a victory sometimes. I think the fans need to feel like they've earned it as well. You know, they've gone through the ringer and you know, they've had the dark times. And when you do get that victory, it's special. Yeah. I mean, we saw that at Indy because I saw the pictures online of
their first home win was amazing.
Yeah. When they had their first away victory, they all met him at the airport.
Yeah.
They all went to the airport and met him there and clapped off the plane.
That's kind of the kind of great things that, you know, should happen, you know. And I mean, I always go back to the Luis Gil goal. I mean, the kid was 16, and I mean, first thing he did was run to the corner, and Kyle picked him up and gave him a big bear hug. And I mean, we were happier for that kid than that kid was probably. I mean, but it's one of those moments where, you know, it was like, I don't know what the score is. I don't care what the score is. This kid just had a big moment, and we were a part of it. And those are the kind of things that I'm looking forward to.
That was 2-1 against Austin.
There you go. There you go.
There is that filing system.
Yeah, that was like
that's amazing.
Chilipedia. Like,
but it was really a nice moment for that kid, and he shared it with us, which was, you know.
And he still remembers it.
Really? Ah,
no, okay. He does. Yeah.
That's fantastic, because we do. I mean, that's one of the things that we keep selling to people about the difference between USL and MLS is that you get that experience. I mean, there's 30 security guards between Landon and the end that he's going to run and jump into. We can grab that kid and throw him over the railing. I mean,
Well, and now speaking of Luis, his name has come up for NYCFC. He may be one of those players cashing in. It's his time. I mean,
he's earned it.
I hope he stays in RSL because I like what's going on there. But,
yeah, but he's one of Jason Kreis's guys.
Jason Kreis's guy, and RSL has a glut of creative players there. He may be looking to move out and make his own name. So.
And he had his chances early, and he wasn't able to stick it out, right? I mean, he's come in here at the end of the year because of some injuries to some guys.
And RSL does have a really good team. He's fighting for time, but it might be time for him to seize that moment.
Yeah, but could you imagine being trained next year by Lampard? That'd be
great for
him. I mean, the things he could learn would be tremendous.
Yeah, not John Terry though. Especially if you've got a wife. Sorry, I had to.
Oh no, he'll teach him how to sell things in the training room as the tour
private company. Tours. Eric Von Nita had a good question, and I know you can't say a whole lot about this, but let me ask. There is an affiliate that may or may not be happening or is happening, but we can't talk about. And I know you've spent some time with coaches or have you already talked about specific players and you know, holding those spots open, obviously, for when, you know, those players are coming down?
Yeah, so I have met. I've had discussions. We've had discussions. So we have a pretty good idea of positionally of what we're going to see next year on loan, and so that helps us a lot with the process of putting the roster together. We know a couple of the guys. What positions will be taken. Some of them are still up in the air, I'll end up at a preseason camp in January to identify, you know, the balance of those players. That's immensely, incredibly helpful to be able to start to identify some of those guys and what positions so that we can narrow down what we're looking for, or more importantly, what we're not looking for, because we know we have certain positions covered.
How does that relationship work out? From your experience with it, because they're going to say, here's Matt Bird, and he is a striker, and this is what he does. And you get him, and you say, you know what? I really think he can contribute being a center mid or a wing. You know, how does that dynamic work
out? I think the first thing is just spending time in preseason camp looking at players. I think I'll have a pretty good idea of what their strengths are before they come into our camp. And so if that discussion needs to be had, we can have it before they actually turn up where it could be an issue. So to be able to have those conversations early will be important. You're just getting out and looking at guys and being able to know where they're going to fit in for you is important, which, you know, leads us to the next part. If we've got to wait to find these MLS guys until their preseason camp to really narrow down exactly who we're going to see, then, you know, we're holding out spots on our roster besides them.
Right.
Because we got to see the quality.
If you end
of those
up
guys.
With six defenders on the last day.
Yeah, if I end up with six left backs, yeah, I have
right,
a problem.
Right.
Yeah? So there's a little bit of a strategy to how we can go about things to make sure that we optimize what we have to offer financially and who we're going to pick up for the season.
And kind of going with what Mitch said, obviously having a good relationship with the coaching staff of whatever team we affiliate with is paramount. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion back and forth on what they want to see or your reporting back, how so-and-so looks or, you know, what things go on like that. You know, an interesting development with the USL Pro now and the affiliation system, or the straight up owning of your own team. We're kind of calling them the terrible twos. You know, you got Real Salt Lake 2, Portland 2, Seattle 2, Los Angeles 2, maybe a few others before it's all said and done. You know, do you wonder sometimes how they're doing their thing, which I know you're worried about your own thing, but maybe it's a little better to have the affiliation system where, instead of the straight ownership, where maybe, you know, Bruce Arena says, hey, you're going to run the same exact system I'm running. I don't care if you're going to lose every game. You know, what's important to me is I see this player in this position and things like that. Do you think maybe they have, I mean, obviously they have an advantage with maybe money and, you know, some of the marketing material that can be done. But do you think sometimes they might have a disadvantage because they don't have the freedom that you have to, you know, run your program?
I think for sure the flexibility that we have helps us. I think their financial arrangement helps them. I also wonder what happens to the guy who's in one of the terrible twos and he's not one of their top four or five players who is eventually going to get pulled up to the first team. Is he eternally stuck then in the second tier for that group? And if he was outside of that arena and in another USL team that had affiliations, right, would he stand a better chance of making it into the league? And he might, because, you know, once you're in a system, you know, in one of those other programs, you get defined by what you can and cannot do, and it's very difficult to get out of that. I think when you end up in another program, an affiliate program, coaches from the top tier, from the MLS team, may look at you and say, oh, look what he has that's different than what we have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from a player's perspective, we might find it, they might stand a better chance to get into the league from being outside of one of those programs.
And I think we do talk about, you know, whether it's six players, I think it was six players last year, what the number was that you could have on loan at any one time. Mm-hmm. That might change. But in addition to those six players, though, you've got a whole team that, if they're looking at keeping tabs on their guys, they might see a guy that you've just brought in, that you've found through a tryout or through scouting, that it's not just those six guys. It's the rest of your team, too, is getting looked at.
Yeah, so that's one of the conversations, one of the cells that we have with players that we've talked to about coming to the program is not only do we have the affiliation and the opportunity, but just the fact that you have an MLS team that's going to come down and watch training and watch games and see that. And then you have, you know, games against opposition that are MLS affiliates or, as you call it, the two teams. So, you know, the opportunity for guys that are not part of the MLS but are part of USL Pro, the opportunities for them to be seen, it's immense right now. And to be honest, every day I get 5, 10, 15 emails or phone calls from players from around the world looking for a spot to play. And some of them are quite good players. So they recognize that there's a new opportunity right now.
Awesome. My final question, and then, you know, we'll let Mitch and Bird do their thing.
We're just bit players in Brad's brain.
You know, I feel bad because I've been talking a lot this podcast, which is pretty much the same as every podcast.
Well, it's pretty much because you cut.
You should have episodes without me.
We tried that once. All we did was make fun of you.
My question was, you know, the state of the league as it is now, if you do a great job, best job you can possibly do, people are going to want to steal all your players. So, I mean, you know, we're not a development team. We're a professional team, as is, trying to win the league. But these players, you know, if they do their best and they exceed all expectations and they do show themselves to be of a next caliber, you know, Tim Holt talks about it, you know, we want these kids to move on. We want them to get better. And I know you're a coach and you develop talent and you want to see these kids succeed. But are you thinking in the back of your mind when a guy goes on a hot streak, or, you know, you're seeing a young player develop, I'm going to have to replace him? I mean, you know, do these kind of things enter your mind as a coach, or are you just taking it one game at a time and worry about the off season during the off season?
No, if we develop a reputation as an organization that helps develop players to a level where they're getting a new opportunity and the ability to move on, we will never have a shortage of quality players. So
good point. They'll want to come in and play for you. Yeah.
And the word of mouth that goes on, the networking between players, you can imagine, you know, nowadays with texting and Twitter and everything else that goes on, the level of communication between the players is tremendous. So if we develop that reputation, we will have no issues finding new players to fill spots. So we would have been doing our job. People could be proud of guys moving on to the next step, just like we are with the guys from AC that are playing in the league. I mean, we're happy for them and feel all of us should feel a level of accomplishment there. The same would be true for guys that were able to move on from here to the MLS. And that's part of being at USL Pro and at our level. That's part of the end game. You want to win championships. You also want to get players placed.
Okay. That's a great answer.
Okay.
No, that's, I mean, you know, I didn't think about that when I'm thinking about, oh, my God, we're going to lose players. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you make a good point. You know, if we do, more will want to come.
It's the factory of winning, so to speak, once you get to that point. I never thought about it either, but then you start thinking about some of these college programs that have done that, that get that reputation. It's kind of the same thing, but on a bigger scale, and it's on our scale.
Yeah,
that's the other thing.
Duke basketball, you know, the top players in the nation want to sign up for them because they move them on. So,
right.
Well, maybe Duke wasn't a good example.
I was going to say best basket weaving.
Kentucky. I just threw that in there for Jesse and Cody.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You got anything, Mitch?
Well, the one thing, too, that I was thinking about is, as the conversation was talking about soccer earlier, is that we got the tournament coming up here where I think there's no chance of SLU and SIUE playing each other until the final, which is kind of disappointing. I think a lot of people are hoping to see something like that. But I imagine that's going to keep you kind of busy here for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be
you probably got some players that you've coached in these games, don't you, Coach?
Yeah, yeah. Guys that I've coached, guys, you know, I saw a tweet from Sam Fink. He's out at Wake Forest, was one of our academy guys. I think he's a senior now, so he just sent a tweet out saying this is our last chance for a trophy. Division One and Division Two. I was up at Quincy last week watching a game up there, and they won their Division Two. I guess it's a round of 32, a round of 16 this weekend. Tournament time's an exciting time. I've seen St. Louis play four or five times, seen SIU play four or five times. They got tough games ahead of them. Be good games. Who's SIU playing, by the way?
They are playing Northwestern.
Oh, wow.
And St. Louis playing Tulsa, and if they win, they go on to play Louisville.
Who's Akron got?
Akron has, hold on.
They play Ohio State.
Yes, they do.
Oh. I saw the
that school in Columbus.
Yeah, and they'll go on to play the Notre Dame, who's the number one.
They'll be playing Notre Dame then. I think Akron will take Ohio State.
There you heard it. There's the first guarantee.
Right. Yeah, so we have a little tie-in there. I mean, Jared Embeck was one of our coaches over at over in Illinois at our program there, and he's the head coach at Akron now. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be interesting. And obviously, we have good connections with the Ohio State guys. And then Vince Cicerelli, who played for us, is at Notre Dame. So he plays up front for them. So a little bit of a tie-in there. St. Louis U played Tulsa earlier this year, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't remember the result, but that'll be a good game.
The Tulsa Roughneck fans gave a little, you know, tweet out earlier today about, you know, a preview for St. Louis FC versus the Roughnecks in the college situation here.
We're not quite as tied to SLU as we are to STLFC. So,
well, yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that's.
But there are a lot of ties to SLU and Gallagher, and I mean, that's the amazing thing with the Gallagher family. I mean, you just rattled off, you know, somebody from every program in the tournament. I mean, there literally are players and coaches everywhere that you've got a relationship with or can reach out to, and that's a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's just a huge network out there for just for anybody that's worked in the youth game and spent years with working with players and then having them trying to get them placed with college coaches. Just have a huge network and it's a small world in a lot of ways. But yeah, we're interested very much and a curious eye towards the tournament because of our relationships with the players and the coaches. It'll be interesting.
And that brings me to something else that I had heard before too, is that, you know, a lot of these things that Dale just mentioned, a lot of them are the Illinois side of the house. You know, these guys and one of my coworkers, her daughter played for you at one point in time, and this nothing but high praise for Coach Shilley. It's just like, oh my God, this is when you have that reputation and these guys go out, there's nothing but praise that's going to come back at the networking level. It's amazing how much respect is out there for Coach and for what our organization's going to have. I mean, I really think people need to understand how lucky we are that it's a family strength, so to speak.
I mean, you guys have said it already, just the way Jeremy and the staff, and it's just not Jeremy and the STLFC staff, but it's from Kavanaugh and Strunk down, and pushing themselves out into the community. It's expected to be done a certain way, and it's expected to be inclusive for everybody, and that's and I think you guys have seen it. That's the way that Jeremy is trying to push things out. So, yeah, I think everybody's trying to get it done the right way, and it'll only come back to help us.
All right. Last one player, past or present, if you could have anyone in the world, who would be the first name on your team sheet?
Past or present, it'd be Marco Van Basten.
I can't argue with that.
Yeah, that's a good one. A good one. Yeah.
I saw you as a Roy Keane type, but Marco Van Basten, he could hit a ball.
Yeah.
No, just him or Dennis Bergkamp. I mean, just watching them, the way they perform, that it wasn't done sheerly on athleticism, and it wasn't sheerly done with brains. It had both. And their insight,
a desire there.
Yeah, and there's their technique, their insight, their ability to, you know what, their ability to do something special when the game needed something special. You know, when you think of Van Basten scoring the game against Russia in the European Championships, I was in Dallas in 94 when Bergkamp scored a great goal against Brazil. Just those two guys are just really, really special players. And and for me, I would take either one of them.
Van Basten, for me, I have to say, because in the late 80s, early 90s, the English teams weren't in Europe. So that European Championship for me was the first time I'd ever seen that great Dutch side. And I was just blown away.
Yeah,
I was as blown away as the England defense was in the group stage. I mean, because I'd not seen them on the TV for six years. And then that goal he scored against Russia, it was amazing. I was like, they're amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the whole team was good. But you know, watching, if you ever guys ever watch YouTube and you see Ronald Koeman knock balls from his own 18, 60 yards or 70 yards forward from Van Basten to deal with a center back draped all over him, and he's laying balls off and running and getting balls back again. I mean, he was unbelievable. Unfortunately, he didn't get some of the accolades that a lot of guys did. I don't think he scored a goal in a World Cup, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he was injured. Van Basten was always injured. Yeah, he was very injury prone, but he won the European Championships. Against a good German team in Germany. I spent a semester at college in Holland, and they said it was all about the war. That victory over Germany was for them redemption from 1945.
50 years later.
Yeah. But Van Basten, that's a
good
choice.
Call.
I can't argue with that at all.
I love it too, because it's not, you know, the typical Messi or Ronaldo.
Pelé,
it's like it was a good call, Coach. I like that.
He could finish though. Van Basten could finish.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Anything else, Mitchell?
No, I'm good. You?
I'm pretty good. I think this went well. I think a good opportunity for some of our fans to get to meet the coach a little bit and hear him in his own words. I like it.
Now he's going to come out and join us for the Christmas party, right?
Yeah.
Put him on the spot here.
He's a busy man. He's a busy man.
All right. Well, then we'll just make it easy. He's going to play for Team Lula again in the Winter Bowl.
We'll work something out.
That's what I just heard. If he's going to be agreeable, let's get him locked down for something good.
We can at least coach us.
No.
That would be worse.
And we'll give the poor guy a heart attack. He'll like, screw this. I'm going back to coaching the 13-year-old girls or something. They listen better.
Well, it's been nice having you on, Coach, and I hope to, during the season, when things are going well, you might make some time for us, at least for a quick interview. Let us know what you think, and maybe tell some of your players they have to come on and play nice on a podcast once in a while.
I'll do that.
Yeah,
can we
get that written into the clubhouse rules? You got to go deal with those guys.
And don't say anything stupid while you're on there.
That's right.
Dale will come over and edit with me. He'll sit down and like, cut that out. Suddenly we'll have a 30-minute show out of an hour and a half.
Bird, you got anything else?
I'm good.
Cool.
Okay, Coach, one last word for the fans. Anything you want to say?
No, just pretty soon we'll have, I guess, signings coming up and start to announce some players, and we got uniform unveiling at some point, right?
Yep.
The schedule, too.
So, schedule's coming up in December, so let's buy those season tickets, guys, and join us on the ground floor of this great club, St. Louis FC. They're making all the right moves, and they need us.
Yeah, your support's appreciated from you guys, and I think season ticket sales, as you said, are going really well, and you better get in there.
All right.
You can before it's too late.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Coach, and until next time.
See you.
All the boys are steaming. All the boys are steaming. All the boys are steaming. STLFC. All the boys are steaming. All the boys are steaming. All the boys are steaming. STLFC. It's in our history. The boys of 1950. The birth of soccer USA. Keeping with tradition. It's in our blood. The past, the future, and today. All the boys are steaming. All the boys are steaming. All the boys are steaming. STLFC. All the boys are steaming. All the boys are steaming. All the boys are steaming. STLFC.